I am Werner Gingerbach, former member of the Peenemünde team and member of the Paperclip Project. I became associated with Peenemünde operation September 1939. At this time, I was an assistant instructor from the Institute of Technology in Darmstadt and a staff member of the Just a few weeks after the start of World War II, the Institute was approached to do development work for the Army Rocket Research. The specific task I was assigned to was the development of instrumentation for the Peenemünde supersonic wind tunnel. Task leader was Kurt Diebus. We assumed together I worked closely from September 39 to January 42. At this time, I was asked by Dr. von Braun to join the organization at Peenemünde, and in particular the guidance and control lab, which was headed by Dr. Steinhoff, and after a short introduction period, he assigned me as the senior test engineer to the STATICAT launch site, the P-7 complex, as we call it. Well, at this time, the first V-2 was prepared for the static firing and for the first active control test. I was a technician who were majorly responsible for proper checkout, test, and all the launch preparations for the electrical and electronic ground and flight system. During the 15 months of my assignment, the first successful V-2 static firing test and the first launches took place. Probably the most exciting experience of my whole life. It was a difficult but also a very challenging assignment. After a severe illness in late spring and early summer of 1943, I received a new assignment and was placed in charge of the mobile ground support prototype fabrication activities. And let me now discuss a phase of my Peenemünde time which I wish to describe in some more detail. This phase would be titled, or should be titled, Lager Rapes. Let me begin the following way. One night in early August, I was asked to join a small group in the officers' club, which was situated quite closely to our bachelor quarters. I lived in house 30 and walked over to the club and met with Dr. Dornberger, Dr. von Braun, Dr. Steiner, and Dr. Diebus, who happened to be there on one of his trips to discuss some of his wind tunnel instrumentation project. The group had gathered there to meet with the famous woman pilot, Hannah Wright. I remember this night very well. I was personally not too impressed of her. She was certainly not an attractive type of woman, and she looked to me as a person with an unusual ego, and I felt her lying stories, which she told, were probably quite a bit distorted and designed to impress the listening rocket man. We all left Sino after quite a few hours talking and thinking. Casino was the officers' club. We called it the Officina. We left there about midnight, and we stepped out. And when we stepped out, the sirens were howling. We all looked up at the sky, and we decided they're flying as usual to Berlin for their daily night attack. We felt there was really not much to worry about, and I went home to our bachelor's quarters, house 30, and I had become quite hungry after we had there and a club few glasses of wine, and it just happened that I had received from my mother a nice package with all kind of good eating things from our farm, and I decided to have still a good night meal before I went to bed. The flag, we called our anti-aircraft unit, was firing a few shots as usual, so I, as always, decided to go to bed. Must have fallen into a very sound sleep. It must have been only about 30 minutes after I went to sleep when my room neighbor, Ritzel, he was Steiner's deputy, glanced with his fist on my door and cried, "You better get out, you are being attacked." I jumped out of the bed and I saw it was almost like daylight. The whole place was illuminated with flares, which we called, as I remember, Christmas trees. And the first bombs were falling, and it started to sound like a battlefield around me. I really didn't understand that I had not waked up from the noise. For some reason, I really was not getting excited, since I had some prior exposure to bombing in various cities, particularly in Darmstadt, where my family lived. I dressed up quickly, and it might sound quite ridiculous, I even put on my tie. Then I put my clothes as I could get together and some shirt into two suitcases I had around, and finally got ready to leave. I went out of the door toward the main entrance, and there I met together with Dr. Martin Schilling. We were apparently the two last guys of all the House 30 residents. Fortunately, we found everybody there from the Bachelor Quarters. Dr. Dornberger, our commanding general, was there, and I will never forget the picture. He was somewhat nervously running around and tried to give orders. And he was in his military uniform breeches and house slippers. Apparently he had found no time to put on his boots, and so he really didn't look very impressive to me. He tried to order some of the people to go out and attempt to save some of the nearby buildings, which started to burn, and but people, since most of them were civilians, were not really inclined to respond. The density of bombs dropping in the air around to the shelter was so large that any attempt to save buildings was just hope. Suddenly a very huge caliber bomb was dropped and floated right in front of the shelter, and pressure ripped open the doors, ripped it clear out of hinges. Those were heavy steel doors, and everybody had felt those doors were would protect us all very well, but we just had to learn differently. So I guess Stormberger finally saw the hopelessness of the situation and did not make any further attempts to order any volunteers to try to fight fire. The bomb drops really went on, and suddenly I saw a man in uniform appearing in one of the open door entrances. He was limping and used a cane, and in the other hand, he was holding a scared little child. It was Lieutenant Steiner who had lost a leg on the Eastern Front, and he had stayed with his brother, Dr. Ernst Steinhoff, and his family at their home. Steinhoff's house had been badly damaged by a bomb. They were in the cellar when the bomb hit, and one of the side of the house was destroyed, but fortunately they were all unhurt. So they decided to walk off through the rain of bombs the next shelter. It was really an amazing thing what this man did. Apparently the war on the Eastern Front had conditioned him to look danger right in its face. The bombing attack by, as we estimated, about 600 night bombers of the Royal Air Force continued for almost an hour and a half. We finally went out, and I started to look around, see what the damage was. It was amazing that quite a few buildings were still there, and some were only partially damaged. I took my two suitcases and walked back around all kind of Bon Greater Street to our house 30. Amazingly, the damage was not severe there either. All windows had been blown out, but no fire damage. It was hard to believe. But a civilian who had been assigned to watch this place just in case fire bombs would be dropped had actually stayed there during the whole attack, and as his orders required, had not left the place and extinguished some minor fires. He was a brave man, but really I have to say it was, in accordance to my experience, nothing unusual. I have had heard of many people, including older women, performing those brave deeds during heavy air attacks in the city. Some got killed this way, but much probably was also faced by people who had learned to put aside fear. When the daylight started, I joined many of my colleagues to get out and look at the damage.